I'm Alistair White. You may remember me from corporate jet investor conferences in those far away days when we were allowed to leave our houses. Welcome to the Corporate Jet Investor Town Hall again. This week is dedicated to aircraft sales and transactions, and we hope you're all well and safe wherever you are. Just a reminder to sign up for CGI Global, our conference on July the 8th that takes off from Hong Kong at 3 p.m. and lands at 3 p.m. in the U.S. We've got already more than 300 people registered. And next week would have been eBay's, so please join us for a European-focused town hall. And if you truly want to recreate the experience of Geneva during eBay's, you can sit and rip up $50 bills while watching us. Right, well, that's enough for me. As you can see, our first guest is Vivek Kaushal. Vivek is the President and Chief Operating Officer of Global Jet Capital. He's in Danbury, Connecticut, and needs no introduction. He's been responsible. He's responsible for managing customers, credit, valuation operations. He has nearly 30 years of finance experience and was also Chief Risk Officer for GE Capital Business Aviation Finance. Vivek, you've been through other tough markets. How do you see the next 12 months?
Well, first of all, appreciate the opportunity here to be here in the community of friends. I'm sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, great. And thanks for coming.
Okay, it's great. And it's great how we've all come together thanks to the efforts of people like yourself. So thank you. As a business, we're coming out of what I think is the acute phase of this. We closed our offices on March 16th, but we were up and running almost immediately. We funded four deals between then and March 31st, and this quarter we've got four deliveries to go. So we're fully functional. Our people are healthy and at work serving our customers every day. Our portfolio has been very resilient, very little delinquency, and the outlook for our clients is now gradually improving as economies around the world come back on stream. So from here on, we see the recovery process starting. It'll be longer than what we would all ideally like. It's going to be more of an elongated V. Some people call it a swoosh. But, you know, with subdued demand, perhaps more pressure on credit as a result of that. But Global Jet Capital's mission is unchanged. Our mission is to simplify access to business aviation. And then in this environment, that mission has a new and different resonance. So in the next 12 months, we're going to be there as providers of financial solutions for our customers, even as we make sure of the safety and soundness of the business for the long term.
Vivek, you're an expert on risk, and we've had lots of discussions about aircraft values. How are you looking at them or working them out now?
So look, a lot of people far wiser than me have spoken here about aircraft values, so I don't know how much more I can add. But I will say this, there will no doubt be trades here in the spot market that mark new lows. I'm not so sure what that says about values, though. I believe that, you know, pre-owned jet values were fairly valued entering the downturn. We certainly weren't in the frothy markets of 08, and we weren't even close to values around the oil shock of 2015. So really fairly valued market coming in. And then when you layer on top the fact that the OEM production rates are likely to be a lot lower and the lack of forced selling so far, I think the dynamic for values this time around is very different. Our interest in values as a financier is over the long term, and we think the spot market isn't really going to be a reliable indicator of that for a good while. So like everyone else, we're going to be careful, but I'm not going to get overly perturbed by the ups and downs in the near term.
Are you still offering operating leases to new customers?
So look, we absolutely intend to keep operating leases as a core product offering. Pricing will obviously shift with aircraft values, but as a lessor, it's really important to allocate capital through the cycle. So we are definitely going to do that. We're absolutely going to be mindful and pick our spots and also take time to let the markets reopen and set pricing levels before we put too much money to work. But unquestionably, operating leases will continue to be a core product for us.
So during the global financial crisis, you saw firsthand banks and institutions pulling out of aircraft finance. Do you see that happening again?
Not as much. We see banks reacting very similarly to us. They're taking care of their existing customers and portfolios. I hear of new deal activity, but it again seems to be focused on existing customers and smaller aircraft. This has not, to your point, be a banking crisis, but bank balance sheets have nevertheless been stretched because customers have drawn on credit lines and banks have had to build up reserves for losses on other lines of business. I do expect over time they will come back, but capital and pricing will be more expensive than before.
And it's in your name that you're global. Are you seeing any interest from areas that have, you know, coming out of lockdown? Are you seeing interest in China or Asia?
Oh, that's actually a great question. I know there have been a lot of reservations about demand from that part of the world. And look, there are reasons to be cautious, but I will point out that it's home to a lot of wealthy and globally mobile people. You know, these folks are truly global citizens and their interest in business aviation is up strongly. I was talking to a management company in the region last night who has a small charter fleet, and they're seeing very strong demand for domestic flight. Their view is that international demand is subdued right now only because of travel restrictions and will rebound quickly once those end. There's some level of new deal activity in Hong Kong and Greater China. Some people move to take advantage of the attractive prices. So yes, we're definitely seeing some green shoots over there. The rest of Asia is still very quiet. They're still in lockdown, and it's going to take a good while before those markets start to come back.
Okay, thanks for those. We've got a question from Bob Shaverly. Due to the financial losses that many lessees or borrowers are experiencing as a result of the shutdown, do you expect there to be an increase in the number of defaults on loans or leases this year? And have you actually seen any defaults yet, or is it mainly requests from borrowers to modify loans and lease payments?
So the vast majority of our portfolio is to single aircraft owners, not to charter operators. We're seeing a little bit of stress, but all of those folks are really talking only about short-term deferrals, not about defaults or long-term restructures.
Okay, we've got more questions. This is from Sharon McKenna. Are you seeing demand for a lot of transactions? Are they mostly refinancing, sale leasebacks, new or pre-owned aircraft, any specific size cabin?
So market's been relatively quiet. There's definitely been inbounds, and the level of inbounds has increased in May. April was very silent. And, you know, it's spread across aircraft, a fair number of large mid-size aircraft, I would say. There are people out there looking and shopping.
Great. And you've got more questions, I'm afraid. From Mike Carman, a friend of yours. Vivek, do you see increased demand from potential obligors looking to monetize their aircraft via cash app financing? You know, do you see people viewing their jets as a potential added source of liquidity?
Definitely. We're seeing that in spots. We've had a couple of inbounds around that. And we're certainly hearing about transactions like that in the market in a way that didn't exist prior to this. Deals that we tracked before where customers paid cash and are now looking to lever the aircraft.
Great. You've got so many questions. And I think some of them you've answered. Just from a risk point of view, did you ever, you've spent years at GE and you've spent years at Global Jet Capital pondering what ifs. Had you ever modeled a pandemic or thought about anything on this scale?
So look, you know, our portfolio is built to withstand a lot of stress. We're very conservatively levered as a business, and we're not, we set ourselves up to take a fair amount of stress. history is a compass. It's not a map. Nobody really knows when trouble comes. But what you do know after spending 30 years in this business, that trouble will find you.
That's a great philosophical answer. So are you bullish or bearish for the next 12 months?
At this point, I think we need to ride out in the next 3 to 4 quarters. But longer term, we're bullish about the market.
Okay. There you go. Added. It's great to have a bullish end on that one. Thanks so much, Vivek. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're now going to go to Washington, nowhere near as far, 300 miles from Connecticut, for Eddie Gross, shareholder of Vedder Price. Eddie needs no introduction. He specializes in helicopter and business jet transactions. I can't find his name on the slide. There we go. Helicopter business jet transactions. Let's see if, and he's there. Great, Eddie, great to see you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Happy to be joining Vivek and all my other pals who are going to be part of the panel, but also all of the other attendees. And thank you for inviting me to do this.
So are you going to talk about aircraft sales or money?
I believe you were supposed to be asking me questions about the remedial aspects of
finance.
Transactions. Right, exactly. We spoke yesterday. You're the one who told me what
You just ruined my very expensive special effects. Okay, Eddie.
Yes.
A lot of, we heard from Vivek that, companies are talking about delaying payments on loans and leases. And a lot of industries have been hit hard by COVID-19. So if you're a financier, what should you be doing now?
Well, there are strategies that are both global and then also circumstantial. Every transaction has its own set of circumstances. And so for a financial institution, it's often the case that if they've made an aircraft loan, a business aircraft loan, they have a relationship with the customer. So they have to consider the particular transaction, but in that context, right? What is their relationship with that customer? Do they have a number of financing products with that customer? If so, that approach has to take into account all the various lines that they might have in place with the customer. But it also could be the case that it's a one-off transaction, either that they originated because they desire to have a relationship with that customer and it was a first opportunity, or they acquired it and it's part of their portfolio. And if it's a larger transactional relationship where the customer has a number of products with the financial institution, then their strategy could there could be one approach for that. If it's just a single transaction, they have more leverage, more freedom, right? They're less concerned about the implications regarding the other products. It's also the case that it's going to be an institutional strategy. So, knowing that this is a disruptive event that could create a number of transactional circumstances, they have to be diligent. They have to be aware of what's going on with each matter and not let the defaults pile up. So if the rent or the loan payment is late, take action immediately. And I don't mean exercise the default remedy. Maybe that's what you might do, but recognize that the event occurred and have conversations with the customers, because after all, they're customers. And you'd want that relationship to endure, find out what's going on. But if it appears that there could be some bad circumstances down the line, the financial institution or other lender or lessor will want to send a reservation of rights letter. A default notice, not necessarily ending the relationship, accelerating or terminating a lease or whatever the particular strategy might be, but just to make it clear that they're not waiving their rights and that they have they're aware of whatever the particular circumstance is and that they might in the future take some action to exercise a remedy. It's also the case that with a bank or other financial institution, that the decision maker might be very different, depending on who manages the transaction after the default. In some cases, it stays with the transactional group. In other cases, it moves off to a workout group. And those, their particular strategies might depend on whether they're concerned about write-offs, right? That's a big issue for most of the institutions. Also, you know, collateral implications across their various collateral lines, or other, you know, institutional related strategy issues.
Do you get the impression that banks are keener to talk now? And, you know, one of the lessons of the global financial crisis was that when a bank's selling an aircraft, it's not a great situation to be in. And I've been talking to brokers who are selling aircraft for people who have loans, and they were highlighting how good the bank was being.
Well, it's an extraordinary circumstance. And I recall the first couple of weeks when we had to start to endure all the implications of this, and there was this sense that we're all in it together, right? So the idea of being careful with all of the people you deal with on a business basis or personal basis, right? That you'd be kinder, gentler, and so that could have been part of it, but also, it's such an extraordinary circumstance, and you know there's so many different implications that we might be aware of or might guess, but might not guess. So being careful is important. And if you know we're all hopeful and we get out of this in a way that there will be some sense of normalcy, we'll want those customer relationships. So it makes great sense. Plus, if you're aggressive and you take back the asset, you better have a good plan. Right, it's yours to hold on to, you know, all the expenses associated with it and the implications to your customer. I can understand why financial institutions, banks, investors would be careful in terms of those relationships.
How complicated is negotiating and changing transactions after signing? You know, can you just do it with a post-it note, or do you need to get a lawyer involved?
Well, I think some of our clients think that you can do it on the back of an envelope. But that's usually more on a transactional basis than when you get into workout stage. I think that most sophisticated financing providers know that you have to be very careful in terms of dealing with these circumstances. You know, you'll want everything to be clear. You'll want everything to be written. You'll want to follow the particular requirements of the financing documents. So, for example, if you're intending to give a notice about an important event, you'll have to be sure that you follow whatever the notice requirements are in the documents. If there are grace periods or notice, other types of notice requirements, you know, be aware of what those are and document everything very clearly. You don't want to, if you're a financing provider, you don't want to prejudice your rights based on that particular circumstance or other circumstances by taking some action that might be deemed to be a waiver or an amendment of an agreement.
And finally, you know, you've been a lawyer for a long time.
The old thing.
How hard is it to get transactions closed off and signed now? Are you seeing, you know, people trying to do more? Or
well, there we had a number of transactions in the pipeline prior to the pandemic becoming a larger issue. And those transactions have closed, and we've been engaged to handle some new transactions since then. And I'd say that it is more challenging, right? The fact that people are working from home, and you know, whatever the registry that you're working with, in my case, it's mostly the FAA, right? They've had their own challenges, and the various parties that have to deal with the arrangements, like inspections or the like, where there's actually some, you know, physical relationship to the process, you know, that's more challenging.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thanks, Eddie. Great to see you. And my pleasure. Tech worked brilliantly. So thank you very much.
Best to all.
Again, so we've gone from Eddie Gross in Washington, D.C. We're now going to try and get Eric Lewin on board. Eric started as a lawyer at, and my slides aren't working particularly well. Yes, they are. Started as an associate at Mayer Brown before working at an international law firm, before working for Bank of America's aircraft finance team, then Air Finance Leasing. He launched his own firm in London and is also the co-founder of Global Closing Room. And he's particularly keen to be on this call because it means he's not homeschooling his twins while he's talking to us.
That's right. They could possibly interrupt. It's nice to see you, and hello to everyone. So tell me about it, Al. What questions are you going to throw at me today?
You start. What is the Global Closing Room for people who don't know, without doing a sales pitch?
Well, the Global Closing Room is a it's a secure and encrypted remote business environment that relies on technology that's intuitive, fast, and convenient to help people get their transactions done. And an additional benefit is that it's mobile friendly.
Okay, so that was short and sharp. Great. How hard is it to actually close a deal at the moment?
It's only as hard as the parties want it to be. The process that we use is really simple. I mean, you would express interest in using the Global Closing Room. You tell us who's a part of your transaction. We'd run a red flag KYC that's completed within a nanosecond. And then once you and your lawyers and everybody else is in, you're pretty much free to organize your closing as you want. We support original signatures, digital execution, and all sorts of other deliverables that could be part of a closing. And we also include version control, among other things. So, you know, there's also an ancillary funds facilitation feature so that if funds need to transit as part of a closing, you know, we can do that in euros, dollars, pounds, and Swiss francs. You know, at the end, we save people time and money because when they close, they get a closing statement that, you know, shows the funds we received, the funds dispersed, a zero balance, along with a closing set of the documents with links to the PDFs for everybody. What's really cool about that is we include confidentiality features that can be activated on a line item basis so that we can satisfy our users' need to know requirements. And then after the closing is done, all of the documents are stored in our blockchain-based system of record, and people who've used us can go back in at any time and at no additional cost to go pull the transaction documents if, for whatever reason, you know, they've had an issue with their own system of record.
Okay, so just obviously using a Global Closing Room makes everything simple, but what risks are there? What risks does COVID-19, or the not so much COVID-19, but the COVID-19 environment pose to business aircraft transactions?
Well, that they'll take more time, you know, but it's not even that. I mean, we're talking about balkanization and retrenchment, as Dustin mentioned last week on the call. And, you know, we're going to be seeing people move we're expecting to see people move into smaller aircraft, which means that transaction costs have to become more affordable and they've got to go more quickly. You know, the fact is we're so flexible. It doesn't matter if you've got a smaller aircraft, a bigger aircraft, or lots of different aircraft that you got to deal with. It also doesn't matter how complicated the transaction is. You know, we make it simple. We make it fast, and we maintain accuracy so that principals can go in, look at their dashboard and say, oh, well, here's where we are. And they can determine what the next steps are to push their transaction along and take them themselves.
Okay, not just about Global Closing Room, but as a lawyer.
Putting on a different hat, I mean, I've been working on a couple of transactions in my legal practice where, you know, COVID-19 led to some logistical issues in one transaction, but we were able to overcome those issues because the destination registry was very flexible. In another transaction, you know, there was the buyer, you know, is making things hard. So, and you combine that along with the difficult registry, and you know, the impossibility for people to fly around and do things that they need to do, or the relative difficulty of it, you know, it just bogs things down. Al, I can't hear you.
Sorry, it's my fault.
Okay.
Richard Berkman saying I should be wearing a headset. I am, Richard. Just as a, we've seen COVID change the way, you know, people are thinking about offices. We've seen it change the way people are thinking about meetings, you know, Zoom, right, and Crowdcast and others. Do you think it's going to change the way that closing calls and transactions happen. You know, is the market, are deals going to become more efficient as a result of this?
Well, we think they should. I mean, with our closing room, you don't even need a call. You know, it's you know, you send an instruction and everything happens. Money goes out, documents are dated and released. So it's, you know, I think the days of the closing call, you know, are definitely limited. I mean, you know, both as a lawyer and, you know, as a provider of legal services and as a consumer of them, man, they are such a waste of time.
I mean, you never said that when you were billing.
Clients don't pay for that stuff. They're increasingly, resistant to paying for what they perceive to be as administrative logistics that should just occur quickly. So, you know, for the clients, we get rid of all of that stuff. And for the lawyers, we help them save opportunity costs for money they can't bill, you know, that they'll never collect.
If someone came to you and said, I want my transaction to go as smoothly as possible, what one piece of advice would you give them apart from using Global Closing Room?
Well, give Eddie Gross a call because he's the money man. And I think there was a really good comment that said he's been practicing law since Dirt was young. So he's got a lot of good experience.
You know, I'm beginning to think he's bribed you for this, but I know Eddie wouldn't pay. So thanks so much.
Okay, thank you, Al.
That was great. Thank you so much to Eric Lewin, founder of the Global Closing Room. And we're going to... thanks for coming on board. We're now going to stick with lawyers. Today is all about transactions. And we're delighted to have John Farish, John became a lawyer first, but he was always going to work in aviation. He's the only lawyer I know with an aircraft tattooed on one part of their body. John, would you like to start by showing us where?
No, that's well, if you can collect some money in the poll section, then sure, we'll do that next week.
So John was a partner as a litigator at a major US law firm before joining Jet Aviva as general counsel and vice president of transactions. John, you're getting a lot of credit, as always, for your bow tie.
You know, I'd take any excuse right now to get spiffied up. So it was either a bow tie or let my wife cut my hair. And I think that I chose the safe option.
Great. What do deals look like right now? You're on the sales side. What are the pain points and difficulties?
Well, I think even before pain points and difficulties, the first thing we have is gratefulness. This time 2 months ago, we didn't even know if we were going to be able to do transactions. The three major components that you need at a bare minimum to get a transaction done are the registry functioning, escrow agents and banks. And, you know, 2 months ago, we were just waiting on the day where the FAA would announce that they were going to close, and we thought we were going to be frozen out. Right now, they still have a few restrictions in place, but nothing that will prohibit deals. Things that are mailed in or sent by courier have a 72-hour quarantine. So that leads to a little bit of delay on international deals where deregistrations arrive by mail or courier. There's a delay in processing the filing times, which is more of a big deal to the financing folks than us. And you know, the banks were a little bit slow at first as they were working from home and they had trouble getting wires out, but that's mostly cleared up. So, you know, from the transactional trenches, we can get stuff done. So that's very reassuring. You know, one of the pain points has been with service centers, but even there, you know, we've got a lot to be grateful for. It's not as bad as they could have been. Almost all of the service centers in the United States are up and running, albeit at a reduced capacity. What a lot of the service centers have done is group their employees into shifts where they're isolated from each other. That way, if any one mechanic tests positive for COVID, they know that they can just isolate the folks that they've been working with instead of having to shut down the whole facility. So that's resulted in a little bit of a reduction in capacity. So pre-buys are taking a little longer than they normally would. And what that's also causing is a little bit of a backup, sort of a double-headed monster. There was a big rush as flying stopped for people to start getting maintenance done on their airplanes, routine stuff that was coming up. So that started filling up the service centers. And then with that and the reduced capacity, some of them are absolutely slammed as far as getting a pre-buy done. One of our favorite pre-buy facilities at Van Nuys, we called them last week to try to fit a plane in, and we were told it was going to be 2 months before they had room to take it in. There's some other pre-buy facilities that are just as slammed. The other awkward thing with the inspection facilities is some of them are depending on what state they're in, are putting in restrictions on who can go and see the airplane. So for instance, at least one of the Textron service centers, if you drop an airplane off, that's it. Nobody can see it until it's time to pick it up. They've closed off their shop to outside folks and potential contaminators, I guess. So that's a bit of a pain, but a lot of them have been good with working with us to get photos and things like that to keep buyers happy and sellers up to date. I think the biggest pain point we've had, and I think people around the world probably feel this way, is being able to actually go and travel and see the airplanes. We have a plane that we have listed for sale in Denmark and the Netherlands, and people can't get there. We have a buyer who's excited in the US to go see it, but he had to live with a FaceTime visual inspection. We had someone there in the Netherlands walking around with a good camera, and the buyer would say, "I'd like to see this," and point the camera to let them see. Crewing issues and moving people around the world is a little bit difficult. Embassies are backed up getting crew visas and things like that, but luckily this community is pretty tight, and there's some fantastic folks out there who specialize in that kind of stuff, and they've figured out ways to get things done. So things are more difficult, but they're still moving. Things just take a little bit longer.
We've got a question from Mike Francis. Are you seeing buyers retrading items in existing deals or having more leverage with new deals?
Yes and no. So it depends on the airplane. We've had things have been strange depending on the aircraft market. Last year, Jet Aviv does a lot of transactions. Last year, we had 7 deals where we had money in escrow and something agreed to in writing that fell apart. This year, we had 7 deals in March fall apart alone, where there was money in escrow and something in writing that the parties had agreed to. One of those, a buyer said after the inspection, he said, "I need 30 extra days to accept or reject the airplane. I just can't buy an airplane right now." We said, "Sure, we'll give it to you," thinking, "Well, too bad, they're gone." A couple of weeks ago, we ended up having 2 other offers on that airplane, and they went ahead and bought it at the same price they had had the plane under contract at pre-COVID. So yes, buyers have some leverage. One tip, and IATA and some of the other folks, Jay's touted this, is one of the things we're trying to avoid is just running down pricing for the sake of running down pricing. So one of the ways we've been avoiding that, and one of the ways that buyers can get leverage if they do want to try to get a deal, is to put money in escrow. One of the ways as a sales organization to qualify a potential buyer is if they already have an airplane, and the other big one is if they have money in escrow. And so if buyers do want to get a deal or increase their leverage, put some money in escrow, because most brokers aren't going to just start negotiating with the buyer, giving away leverage and giving price reductions unless they know that they're real.
I guess that's a great answer. Thanks for that one. I've got another question from, I'm just going through, sorry, from Mike Davis. Are brokered buyers having difficulty accessing finance?
We have not seen any deal go south because of an ability to access finance. We do a lot of CJs, Phenoms, and mid-size stuff. And, at that price point, we have not seen any lenders waffle on financing. I think Jim Simpson would be a great guy to ask about that to see what he sees on, especially as far as the larger aircraft.
Okay. And I think you've touched on this, but this is a question from Bob Shabley. With most international travel still being restricted in most countries, are there any new cross-border international BizAv financings being accomplished today?
You know, I don't know about the financing side. Most of the time, what we see on the financing is wherever the buyer is, is getting the financing in their home country anyways. So I don't know how that's being affected. The international deals are fewer and further between. What's going to be really interesting is with the strengthening of the U.S. dollar and potential huge buying opportunities out of, you know, Canada, Mexico, and Brazil, whose currencies have all taken a hit, but who also have a large fleet of airplanes. It'll be interesting to see whether deals end up coming out of there.
Okay, it's a great one. Have you seen any new buyers yet?
Oh, this is what we were most optimistic for. You know, everybody's been talking about new buyers now for about a month. And, you know, with your N equation, Al, talking about, you know, people coming out of the industry and versus people coming in, we're very hopeful. Our sales directors, we have 12 or 13 sales directors, and I know they've all been dealing with potential new buyers. You know, one of the difficulties there obviously is qualifying, because we get calls from potential new buyers all the time anyways. But we have 13 deals right now, worth money in escrow and things in writing. Of those 13 deals, zero are to people who have not already owned an airplane. So that's an interesting data point. You know, I was talking to an escrow agent yesterday in Oklahoma City. Between Monday morning and noon yesterday, they'd opened 14 files. Of those 14 new files, five of those were trades. So, you know, to me, that says not a whole lot of new buyers yet. I think buying an airplane is complicated. It's not like, you know, going to your neighborhood car dealership and buying a car. It's more like buying a business. It's a complicated process. So I think maybe we were a little bit too optimistic at first. I think where the real opportunities are for new buyers are probably going to be with our friends in charter. I think they're going to be the gateway to getting those folks into the world of private aviation. And then depending on their usage, you know, they'll get into aircraft ownership. I mean, obviously ownership only makes sense if you're flying a certain amount of hours a year. And right now with the depressed flying hours, it's going to take a bit, I think, for the new buyers to cross that threshold and into the, you know, 150, 200 hour a year area where buying really makes sense.
What's your biggest frustration at the moment?
I think my biggest frustration is just the uncertainty, like everybody else. Everybody likes to be able to see around the corner and know what's coming. One of the hardest things we're doing is trying to manage expectations between buyers and sellers. You know, this time last year, you know, when you're negotiating a deal, you're quibbling over small points or arguing over, you know, 2% of an aircraft's price. You know, is the plane worth $5 million or is it worth $5.2 million? Now you have buyers who think that the world is going to end and you need to, you know, really pull a rabbit out of a hat for them to buy an airplane. And then you have sellers who think that, well, the stock market mostly rebounded and, you know, we flattened the curve and everything's opening and we're going to be fine. I don't need to adjust the price of my aircraft at all. So how do you reconcile those two viewpoints? And every iteration in between, we're just, there's so much unknown. I think that's my main frustration. The second frustration, obviously, is the opening things up and the difficulty traveling. You know, I heard from one of the largest operators of aircraft in Europe last week, and it's someone who's a huge advocate for the EU, but he expressed his disappointment that, you know, when things really started to hit the fan, nationalistic tendencies really kicked in, and instead of having a coordinated response, everybody had piecemeal rules put into place that have really hampered, you know, everybody's travel and the ability to figure out what's next.
Okay, question from David Dixon, it's our last lawyer. You're getting all the legal questions. Why can't we go back to the old ways of closing? flying into international airspace and closing then. Used to work in the past, still works and works in today's environment, and is cheaper.
I don't know about flying into international airspace. Does that mean, you know, having an aerial refuel tanker come by and we just stay in the air and build and close over our, the go-go air-to-ground systems? I've never been part of a closing that was had a plane airborne, but sounds interesting. I'd volunteer to go on those flights.
I don't think the lawyers go on the flight. I think the plane just leaves airspace for tax reasons.
Oh, they're doing it wrong then.
Okay. So finally, I'm just going through the last questions. There's a lot of nice finance ones, which I won't make you do. Are you bullish or bearish?
Oh, I'm bullish for sure. Knock on wood, but oh, there we go. Sound effect wasn't as good as Eddie's, but I'll take it.
Which one do you have?
No, two. We're definitely bullish. You know, I think things, knock on wood, can only go up from here. One of the lessons that we've learned, and one of the things to me that's been really encouraging amidst all the nonsense going on, is the importance of relationships, and relationships not just with our clients, but with each other. Eddie mentioned the we're all in this together, and boy, oh boy, has it been true. With the transactions we have going on right now, it's interesting to see that a lot of the, I don't want to say bedroom brokers, because we're all pretty much working from home right now, but a lot of them have sort of gone by the wayside. And of all the deals we have going right now, they're all with other brokers who we've worked with before, or who are well-known, reputable, who we can rely on to take care of things from the other side. Or when we're dealing directly with end users, they're all people who've owned airplanes before and who have a pretty good degree of confidence. But it really goes to show the value of, the events where we are getting together, where we're making the connections, where we can lean on each other, cross borders. We have friends all over the world in different areas of expertise who can help us. Go look at an airplane in England or in the Netherlands, or who can coordinate crew to get back, or who can find financing for somebody. So that's been one of the biggest takeaways for me amidst all this, is just how important all these relationships are. And Al, I know I'm certainly grateful to you for all you do to help bring us all together.
I've got nothing else to do. What's nice though, is you look at the community. So we've got Grant Atchison in the Isle of Man, who is doing a fly over deal this weekend. But then Ed Camera, a renowned aviation lawyer in America, has said it doesn't work for US registered aircraft because the temporary registration given at closing does not allow for operations outside of mainland US. So fly time wire is not effective until well after closing.
Right.
So it's free legal advice we're getting from everyone. John, thanks so much. It's great having you on. To Jet Aviva, 2 weeks running, we're very grateful. John Farish, Vice President Transactions and General Counsel at Jet Aviva. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you, Al.
No, thanks. Great seeing you. Okay, and now we're going to go to California for Jim Simpson. Jim needs no introduction. He joined First Republic Bank in March 2006 and has built a portfolio of hundreds of aircraft or hundreds of millions of dollars. First Republic specializes in bespoke deals, mainly for high net worth individuals. But before that, Jim was in aviation finance at Bank of America. He's also a pilot who started flying when he was at high school. Hi, Jim, how are you?
Good afternoon, Al. I'm doing great.
It's a funny market. What are your clients saying to you at the moment?
We're getting a lot of new clients now on bigger equipment. It's really an interesting time. Listening to John, I agree with a lot of John's points before. We're very active. We're digging a little deeper on the credit side to make sure the cash flow generators will be maintained as we get through this whole situation. But it's good.
Is that because your clients tend to be in the tech markets and less so in hospitality or casinos, which are having a tough time?
Yeah. A number of our clients are in commercial real estate. and that's got us digging really hard to make sure that, you know, they don't have, you know, anyone that's got, that owns the dirt in the building that's leased to the big box stores like the Home Depots and Best Buys and all those things are the ones you really have to look at carefully to see where it's going to be.
Okay, I've lost Jim briefly. What I'm going to do is I'm going to try closing Jim off and then coming back in. It's ironic, isn't it? It's always California that's the problem. You know, the best Wi-Fi in the world. And I'm bringing Jim back in now. Just to remind you all, next week will be a European special. And also, please click on the link, CJ Live there. Ah, Jim, you're back on. Sorry, we lost you for a second.
I'm here.
It's always the Wi-Fi in California that lets us down.
It really is. I've gone through my Wi-Fi challenges this week, and that's my one concern about this whole remote working from home is the Wi-Fi issues.
How are you? I asked Vivek earlier. How are you guys monitoring aircraft values?
Our process is we have two outside consultants that we talk with a lot. On the values. We look at the aircraft. We try and look at all the airplanes in the portfolio probably once every 2 years, maybe once every 3 years, but we get data collection sheets on each aircraft every year and feed that to our aircraft valuation people. So we come up with a new value every year and share that with the owner. So there's no surprises about what's going on. I think we're also pretty cautious in dealing with or telling the owners that these airplanes don't go up in value. I think I've seen that once or twice in my career. At a different period of time, but right now everything is—it's not going to go up; it's going to go down. So get used to it.
At the moment, banks are telling me they're open, although banks always tell me they're open, even when they're not. Do you think they're going to stay open in this downturn, or do you see the market contracting again?
It's a good question. I get the impression that there's going to be some smaller players that got in the last couple of years may get out of it. But I know, you know, we have some very formidable competitors out there that are in the business. We're in the business. We have access to capital, and people are saying, if you can do more, do it. So, it's like any other business cycle. You're going to have a couple players go away, but I don't think it's going to be the big ones. It's going to be maybe some of the smaller regional banks.
Okay, you've got lots of questions. You got all the finance ones. John got the legal. Here's a nice one from Jet Values, Jeremy. With all the billions and trillions being handed out by governments by printing new money, how much do you expect inflation to come back?
Good question. I guess with the money being printed, you would have to think that that may be the case, but I've also heard there might be deflation too. That's why this is such a unique time. You know, nothing we could ever rehearse or practice for. If we had brought this up a year ago, there's going to be a pandemic around the world. Everyone would have said, you know, you're nuts. But here we are.
And even in January, when you were over for CGI London, you know, right. The pandemic was seen as a Chinese issue. It's amazing how quickly it's changed.
Yeah, and it's brought some really good things to us. So First Republic is a bank of 5,000 people. I think the number we have is 3,500 people working from home. And most of us are saying, why do we need an office? Maybe we need to go on a half a day a week to meet with people, but the rest of the time we can work from home. And it's working pretty well.
Yeah, and also James Pearson from Viasat is suggesting you need Viasat connectivity in your house.
Probably true.
Okay, another popular question. Interest rates are going to be lower for longer. What are the effects on timing of purchases or refinance opportunities?
Well, I mean, you know, when you do a deal, you do it at the market price at the time it's done. So for some of our better clients who maintain a lot of other business with us, we've proactively been reducing rates. We can do that since we keep everything on our balance sheet. We don't syndicate anything or participate in anything. We don't use derivatives. We can go fixed rate or floating and flip between very quickly. So we're not tied to any of that. So again, we look at where the markets are, where the clients are, and really try and work with them.
Are you still happy offering operating leases when you know everyone's wondering about pricing at the moment?
We have never offered operating leases. We don't own any airplanes. All we do is structured debt, and we find that's very compelling. in this type of environment, the structured debt.
Would you, what would you, if you were at a different, if you were at a more asset finance based institution, would you be happy offering them now?
If priced accordingly, I mean, the big issue there is what are you going to use for a residual value? We've all seen what's going on. So you tend to be a little more cautious. I mean, in my previous employer, we did operating leases, and some of the big banks got hurt where they own the aircraft is what they bet on the residual didn't develop. So I would be more cautious with it. You also look at age of aircraft, current production, all those good things to see which airplanes you would be financing.
You're also active in the yacht market. What are you seeing in that market at the moment?
It's busy. It's very busy. I was over in Amsterdam on March 13th looking at a big yacht we have under a refit contract right now. And so there's, I think the ultra high net worth people are hunkering down, and those that didn't have an airplane are saying, I'm going to get one now because I know I'm going to have to travel and I'm not going to travel commercially. They're also saying they want to keep their families around, and they're looking at buying boats now too to do it for the family experience.
Do you think there's been a lot of talk about people buying smaller aircraft, and I know your typical client tends to buy larger cabin, although I know you also do quite a lot of pre-owned aircraft. Do you see that there's going to be demand for the large global capable aircraft? I'm not talking about Bombardier, but, you know, the larger cabin, or do you see the focus being on the smaller aircraft side?
Well, if I take today as an example, what we see is we see a number of globals, G550s, G450s, Falcon 7Xs. So we're seeing people go with longer range airplanes. And again, we're happy to do those. We're also happy to do the super mids and the mids.
And so you're not, is it too early to call it?
Ask the question again, please.
Is it too early to see a trend, would you say?
I would say yes. I mean, who knows how long this is going to last? And who knows how this is going to reset our business? I mean, we're taking this as an opportunity to look at our business internally on processing. We had a big project going on to go to DocuSign for documents. Clearly, we need to go to DocuSign because wet signatures are sort of a thing of the past. I think the closing room is another great example of that. We need to sort of step up our technology we use on the process, and we're looking at that. We're trying to make ourselves better in this whole thing.
Okay. Jim, you're a upbeat, cheery guy, but you're also a banker. Are you bullish or bearish at the moment?
I'm very bullish on it. I think that's good. I think this is a temporary deviation. Now, what's the new norm going to be? That I don't know. And I think it's going to be very different than what we're used to. You know, as some previous speakers have said, this is about relationships. I mean, John mentioned that. This is about relationships that we all have, and how did we get those relationships? One of it's from meeting each other personally, physically. And it's something very important to keep that up. So I look forward to getting back out and traveling a little bit, maybe not as much as I did before, but to seeing everybody. Because, again, this is amongst the community and relationships and friendships.
Okay. A question from Bob Shaberly. Will all of the ongoing changes in the business aviation financing, will we see more lenders incorporate LTV, loan-to-value adjustment clauses, in the standard loan documentation if the values of aircraft continue to change significantly? Do you think we'll see more true?
I would guess yes. We've been involved with that for years. As I tell owners, there's two ways we can do this. We can go in and have a true up on the loan to value periodically, or we'll book a really low balloon or residual and we'll live with it. But you look at the economics and most of them say, okay, we'll go with the loan to value correction.
Okay. Well, that's a hard conversation to have, isn't it?
No, it's not hard at all.
Isn't that calling up? Saying the value of your aircraft has fallen down. I need you to...
Well, we get lots of phone calls from people wanting to refinance their existing airplanes. And the phrase we hear often is, I've got the best one out there. I've got the best Challenger 604, 1997 out there. You know, and perhaps they do, but it's only worth $2.5 million. Oh, no, I've got $7 million into it. And I have these conversations daily. You name the airplane, and I've had the conversation about it. And all we can do is show people the data. of what these airplanes sell for and what they, you know, what the values are.
Okay. Finally, Jim, we've had a poll going throughout this asking if the number of people flying due to COVID-19 will be less than the people the industry loses due to the economic downturn. Are we going to see more new people coming into the market? Are they going to make up for the people we lose? Or how do you read the next year?
I think my time frame is probably more in the 2 to 4 year range right now. I think we're still going to be healing from this next year. I think the recovery is going to be more of the hockey stick approach, flatline, flatline, flatline. Then it starts peaking up a bit. It's not going to be a U or a V. I think in time, I mean, business aviation is a very healthy industry, and it's not going away anytime soon, if ever. I'm very bullish on it, and I think we will see more people flying in time. I wish you'd do that a little louder and really get it out there.
thanks so much for this.
Yeah, I look at what the airlines have to go through, you know, and my big concern is, like, can I get to where I need to go on a commercial airline at this point in time? And that's going to be difficult. I think that's a lot of what a lot of people are asking themselves, and hence it's pushing people over the edge to get into private aircraft.
So that's great. And finally, when's California coming out of the lockdown?
Great question. The governor has pushed that down more to the counties right now in the state. But it's still odd. It's not time. You see a lot of people that put up a table at their entrance of their business, and they'll wait on you that way, and you stand outside. I think restaurants are – I hope restaurants do come back, but I have a funny feeling it's going to be a hard go for them.
Okay, brilliant. Thanks, Jim. We really appreciate having you on.
Anytime. I enjoy it.
Okay, take care. Bye. So on the whole, just to use our new kits, which has cost millions – everyone has been bullish. I think all our speakers have been bang on target, and I'd like to thank them all. We'll see you all next week for the eBase special. Bring your fondue, bring your fondant, and we look forward to seeing you all next week for the eBase European Town Hall. Thank you very much. Stay safe and look forward to seeing you soon. Goodbye.